Welcome back to another episode, guys, of the Straightforward Podcast. Today's guest is a friend of mine. His name is Mr. Joe Elliott. In my phone, he's the Joe Elliott. We've had the opportunity to work together over the past 2 years where I've just been in a, we'll just call it a lull in my life. And Joe has graciously employed me to come to his house and do tons of slave labor. And it's been really hard. No, it's been really great. And we've had some amazing conversations. And the reason I want him on today is because we've just had a, like I said, a ton of really insightful conversations, and he's shared a lot of knowledge that he's learned over the years. And I think it's going to be very valuable for you guys listening. We're just going to say, we're going to call this episode Advice to My Younger Self. And hopefully you guys get something out of it. I know I will get something out of it. And without further ado, I would love, Joe, if you would just tell us a little bit about yourself, sure, what you're doing now currently, and just break it down for us as quickly or as long as you want.
Sure, sure. Well, I'll key off of Kyle. First of all, thank you. I mean, it is always good to be with you. I've enjoyed our conversations as we've worked together over the last couple of years, something like that. You call it slave labor. I mean, the only thing I could think of that was slave labor was I had a big pile of scrap wood, literally a pile of scrap wood from finishing the interior of part of my barn, our barn. And I wanted it split for kindling. And we put Kyle on that task. And I mean, I think it took you like a day. I mean, you were just like ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk with an axe. And my neighbor, brutal, wasn't it?
It was awful.
And I've got a smart aleck neighbor named Tim. He's delightful. And he's leaning over the fence, you know, harassing Kyle. And later he just said, "Did you run the guy off?" And I said, "That's the goal. You know, if I give him something hard and fire him, like you said, at the end, you know, when we're done and Kyle and I settle and he gets paid, and I just say, okay, you're fired." And like you said, just call him back. Anyway, we have a good time. But I met Kyle.
That was by far the hardest thing. That was the worst thing he ever put me on. It was terrible.
Yeah, and that's when my neighbor said, "Okay, that guy's a keeper. If he comes back, he's a keeper." I said, "He's a keeper. Don't worry.
Let's go."
Yeah, but Kyle's had a great. We're on, I guess, a little suburban homestead, if you want to call it that. Raising a few animals and gardening and things like that in my, you know, third trimester of my life. I guess I'm 62 years old today, actually. And
today's your birthday?
Yeah, it is.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, happy birthday. This is awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just a great birthday treat here. Well, it landed on this day. I mean, you and I were scheduling back and forth, and it just happened to land on this day. No big deal. But all that to say, and, you know, here in this next stretch of my life, dare I say the final stretch, but in this stretch of my life, you know, I'm doing some stuff that has always been in me to do. And come from a family that has, you know, some of the family were gentleman farmers and things like that. So I grew up doing quite a bit with my hands. And like most people, many people, you know, got out of school, went corporate world for a little bit, and then went into basically private business pretty much since then. But anyway, that's kind of a lot of what we got going on around here these days. And those projects that Kyle's alluding to, just use your imagination, you know, fixing a fence or digging a hole or whatever. And he's been hugely helpful. Anyway, I was saying I met Kyle originally through one of my kids. Molly Ann and I have been married for 40 years, 39 years. And we've got four grown children. Our daughter is our oldest. She has two sons and then three boys after that. And my oldest son has two sons. And it's through him that Kyle and I actually got acquainted. Anyway, that gives you a little thumbnail of, I guess.
Yeah, a little snapshot.
High level, yeah, high level of.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, the older I get, and I can imagine where you're at. It's like kind of hard to summarize 60 years in 5 minutes. It's like, gosh, where do I even start?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, you start largely with the now, you know, because there's something about living. I'm not saying I'm great at it, but at least I think aware of it is living in the now, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Not in the past, not in the future, but living in the now, certainly informed by the past and living in the now in anticipation of what you want your future to look like.
Yeah.
And working to that end. But there's a ton of people out there that navigate that much better than I do, for sure. But anyway, it's kind of hard to summarize. So just start with where you're at, I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, since you said you talked a little bit about this a second ago, I'd like to hit on this. What I'd like to tell the audience is what Joe alluded to is Joe is a very well-rounded individual where you're in the business world, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have an actual you're in the digital space, business world, like you do a lot of like sales and like, so you're in that space, but you also grew up where like, you understand how to do a lot of things like tangibly with your hands, like how to build, create, break down, like you're an interesting dichotomy. And so I guess I'd like to hear a little bit about, cause you're not homesteading now, but you're moving toward that, like really full-time homesteading. At least I think you still are. I'd like to hear a little bit about, I guess, what got you into that? And you and I have had some conversations, and we can go down that rabbit hole, which is a lot of fun if you want. But
these are bunny ears. Yeah. Let's go.
Everyone put their tinfoil hat on real quick. Oh, look, this thing, I didn't know this thing did that.
Yeah, that's cool.
So what got you into the homesteading, and you know, where did you acquire all that knowledge of how to do it? I mean, was it just over the years or what?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I look away, I mean, whatever the nonverbal things are that we're taught, you know, if I cross my arms, it's closed. It's usually my backwards. And when I look away, it's I'm looking into part of my brain. Honestly, I think, and everything hopefully that I say is honest, but candidly, I think that the vast majority of it is something I would call bent. You know, it's Scripture talks about a child having a bent, and the wisdom of a parent is to observe what their bent is, their gifting, their gift set, their interests, their nature, and encourage them in that way. And so I think a lot of it is just design, the way God put me together to have a curiosity about outdoors, how things work. And I would say, if I could put that in a nutshell, God gave me the ability to envision things. So I can look at a piece of land and see, like, almost instantly what it looks like finished, you know?
Yeah.
And, just as an example, or envision a building sitting on it in great detail. And so I'd say that's part of my gift set. And another part would be, and it's probably very similar when you apply that ability to like the natural world for, you know, something to do with land or a building or making something physical. I think there's a derivative of that or an expression of that just kind of manifested in my life with regard to the business world. I can, even as a young person, I could walk into, and still today, walk into an arena, a business, and get a bit of a feel for what's happening and then be able to kind of see the big picture, kind of where things are, where they need to go, and then gather information just by, you know, driven by curiosity and asking questions and kind of figure out the disparate parts and then in some cases, relatively quickly see a macro solution. And then I'll carve out a piece of that and go execute on it. So I'd say it starts with a gift set, and then the way I went about getting experience, you know, when I think about myself as a younger person, again, it's just curiosity. It's like I would look at something and go, oh, how is that built? And I'll just go build it.
Yeah. You know?
I'll just go, because I could see it, and it was just a matter of bringing it to life. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of experimentation, a lot of, you know, measure once, cut twice mistakes. Still make those mistakes. No big deal. It's just part of the equation. But I think a lot of it was just curiosity. And adults noticed that. And like I was asked when I was, you know, 10 years old, you know, hey, do you know how to shovel a driveway? Sure. You know, I would do that, mow yards, of course, and then build things at my own home. Neighbors would see that and go, you can build a fence? Yeah, sure. Will you build a fence for us? Sure. Yeah, no problem. You know, and source the lumber, build a fence. I had at one point when I was in college, my parents lived in a different town than where I was for college. But when I went home for college, one of their neighbors was a physician. And he said, hey, you built that fence for your parents. Can you build a gazebo? I was like, sure. Never built a gazebo. And he paid me handsomely to do it, you know. So just things like that, you know, there's just a curiosity and trying things, and I love to learn. Curious about the world, and you know, just try things. So
you were an entrepreneur at a young age then. I mean, it sounds like you were on the business front at an even really young age.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, I hesitate calling myself, I don't know if I hesitate. Sometimes I use the term entrepreneur, sometimes I don't, but self-employed, you know, self-starter, if you want to call it that. But yeah, I think when I was 6 or 7, probably about 7, being around the farms and stuff that some of my relatives owned, there was a particular pickup truck that was pretty prolific in that era, and it was a 1949 Chevrolet. And I don't remember offhand how many of those were built, but it was post-World War II when the boom started, and there were a ton of those trucks on farms, and they were beasts. They were workhorses. I mean, they lasted forever, et cetera. Anyway, I took a fancy to that vehicle. It's like, I want one of those. So I started in my odd jobs, you know, mowing yards or building things for people and getting paid for it. I started sending my money to my grandmother in an envelope through the mail at 8 years old. And because I didn't want to spend it. And she put it in a passbook savings account. Like, I'd send dollars and coins. I wouldn't do that today, so I started when I was 8, the day after I turned 15. So September 25th, I bought a 49 Chevy, and then I spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 years figuring out how to fix that up, you know, rebuilt the engine and had it painted and kind of tricked it up a little bit, that kind of thing.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So wait, you started saving at 8 years old, and then at 15, bought your first truck.
$595 is what it cost. That was in 1970, whatever, 7, 1977. Yeah. But
that's awesome, man. There are not many people out there. There are not many adults out there that do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
Well, my kids did it, you know. I mean, it wasn't anything I necessarily imposed on them. It was just help encourage their vision to own a vehicle and yeah. to work for it. We actually gave our daughter a car, our oldest, and that's before I kind of figured kind of the formula out. And if I could go back and do something differently, I would do that with her too. You know, but it was like, hey, you get a scholarship, college, we'll take care of the car kind of thing. I don't fully regret it, but, you know, she's a powerful young woman and today is a very powerful, competent businesswoman and mother. If I could go back and do something differently, that would be one thing, you know, is help her earn her vehicle. Yeah. And she did intangibly. I mean, she did. I mean, she worked and smart and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, encourage that with the kids, you know, to work. And the boys did lawns, had a lawn business and saved and bought their first vehicles before. You know, when they were probably juniors in high school, and the deal was, you know, buy something in cash and make sure it'll hopefully get something good enough that's going to last 2 or 3 years after you graduate from college. So you're not, you know, faced with, you know, going into debt for a car out of the gate. So anyway, that's kind of the car story as it played out, you know, in my family, if you will. But
yeah, anyway. Well, that's a great segue, because you alluded to, if you could go back in time, that's something you would do different. So let's jump right into that. Like, you today, 62 years old, I imagine there's a little bit of like just reflection to some extent, like birthdays kind of do that for you, I think. And if you could look back, maybe high level.
I'm thinking about, right? Actually, I'm not. I'm thinking about what we're going to have for dinner. My wife's taking me out tonight, so I'm not really reflecting.
Oh,
but I'll go there.
That's awesome.
But I'll go there.
at some point, maybe when you're sitting on the toilet, you'd be like, I gotta pause for a moment. Okay, so if you go back in time, like, what would you change? Not about your life, but like, what would you tell yourself, young 30-year-old?
Well, I think what I do know, and I'm just stating the obvious, if anybody, you know, just stops and thinks about it, I think the reality is the way God created us in His image and the world is our beliefs drive our behavior. So what we believe, predominantly at a subconscious level, you know, what our belief system is, plays itself out in the way that we behave or act, if you will. And what I'm finding as I grow, as I get older, I'm intent on continuing to grow. And as is my wife, and she provokes me to grow. Well, that means, you know, in order to grow, something dies. Something dies. You know, you plant a seed in the ground, life springs from the seed. But if you go digging looking for the seed, you can't find it. It's gone. And that's the cycle. So all that to say, if I really want to grow, it's not just behavior modification. It's a shift in beliefs.
Yeah.
So an old belief has to die in order for a new belief to emerge. And I think it's having an open, willing heart to grow. And that's hard. I mean, for me, one of the hardest things I think I do or have done is shifting my beliefs. It is, you know, the physical work, building a structure. Yeah, that's hard. You know, you know, working in the sun, that's hard. You know, figuring out how to, like you said, you're in a transition part of your life. I've been in plenty of them where it's like, okay, I'm hustling to provide for myself and my family, but I want to do something different, or I don't have enough to do and I got to figure it out. That's hard. But I think, at least for me, what's harder is putting to death an old belief and embracing a new belief. And it's hard for me for a number of reasons. You know, one is there's some pride involved because you've built your life on this belief. And there's a lot of data that supports that belief. But like anything else, you know, you're an athlete, you know, you work out, you've got the mentality, at least in that arena of your life. But I think it's applying that same mentality to any and every arena of your life if you want to grow. And that is, you work the muscle. And the more you work the muscle, the better condition the muscle gets. So this muscle of being willing to examine your beliefs as they, you know, kind of become obvious to you. And then, you know, being willing to step into the process of change, which can take many years. I forgot your question. What would I go back and do differently? With that as a very long prelude, I would go back and, if I could, just wave a magic wand, I would go back and say, okay, some of the beliefs that I now embrace, I would go back and embrace in my 20s or earlier, if possible.
Yeah.
And who knows what that would do to the trajectory of my life? Who knows? You know, what would those be? Yeah. So all that to say is, I've got some regrets, plenty. And I used to mimic what I heard in culture. It's like, you know, I don't have any regrets. I don't want to die without, you know, with any regrets and all that. And it's like, if you do, you've missed something. In my opinion. There's things I have regrets over because my beliefs, you know, created a set of behaviors that affected the people around me, good or bad, you know. And, you know, like Kyle, when you and I are together, when any two people are together, this is the way I see it anyway, my beliefs translate through my behavior. And you, when you're with me or in my orbit or my atmosphere, or I'm with you, I think this happens with all of us, but let's just use that. This is an example right now. So I have beliefs. I may not be speaking them, but somehow there's a vibe that comes out and in my behavior. And when you're with me in my orbit, physically or virtually like this, we're still somehow, interestingly enough, we're connecting, you know. But you experience me. You experience my behaviors. And actually what you do is you experience yourself and how you feel when you're in my presence, if that makes sense.
Now we're getting deep.
And what both of us know is what we tend to remember is how about people is how did they make me, how did I feel when I was with them?
Yeah, 100%.
It's how we tend to catalog how we remember them. I don't like that guy. Why? If you really stop to think about it, a lot of it could be because I don't like the way I felt when I was in your presence. You know, not in all cases, but in many. So, you know, my family life, beliefs about my wife, you know, I think the truth is she is my co-equal. And I had a subconscious belief system then, and there's probably still remnants of it now, you know, that I had an extra vote as the guy, you know, when it came down to it, I had an extra vote. And So in the end, you know, it was my call. And I kind of hate to admit that because, but I think that's fraught through our culture and around the world, you know, pick a religion, pick a country, it doesn't really matter. And I just think that's a lie. I think men and women, husbands and wives are equals. God created us to be equals. And what does that really mean and look like? I don't really fully have my arms around it yet, to be frank. If that belief had, you know, I had that belief in my 20s, it certainly would change the way she experienced me. And, right. And, you know, it's kind of death by paper cuts, you know?
Yeah.
If it's negative, then that just builds up over years and years and years. And then there's a distance that occurs, understandably. Because it's like, I want to kind of, it's not safe. And if your marriage is like that, then it affects the culture of your household in some way, yeah. You know? So I'm just in the process of unpacking a lot of that and doing what I know to do to shift and change that stuff. And I'll go, you know, just like going to the gym, you just go through these seasons where it's like you're knocking it out and you're doing it and you're busy. And then, you know, something happens, you fall off the wagon for 3 or 4 months. It's not worth it. You know, I quit, you know, whatever. And you just go through those little valleys or seasons of no growth, you know, or regression. But
yeah.
I'd say that would be, if I could go back and talk to my younger self, it was, what are the beliefs that really matter that are true,
yeah.
You know, that shape the quality of your own life and the quality of your relationships, and get busy on that, focus on that. And,
yeah.
You know, I was focused on other things. I mean, make a buck.
Yeah.
You know, figure out what you want to do, get fulfilled, you know, all that stuff that you chase that's legit. But if it's chasing that to the point where you're ignoring the other things that really matter, you know, what you focus on and what you put your energy to yields an outcome.
Yeah,
and 100%. So it's,
well, that's what
I would choose to focus. You know, I saw them, I knew they were out there, I knew they were important. Don't get me wrong, I feel like I have a very good marriage because I'm married to a very good and devoted woman, and I have a good family. I have kids that are making their way in the world, you know, and
yeah,
but so I saw those things. But I mean, like, intently focusing on really what matters. And
yeah.
So if I could go back, that's probably that would be the family of things I would change, would be largely some of those beliefs. And I just gave you a couple of examples.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, well, once you shift the belief and it's real, your behavior takes care of itself.
Yeah. 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 Behavior is like a symptom. It's a symptom of the belief.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what I find interesting, man, is because, like, I think, at least I was for a long time, and there's probably people out there listening that even though they know, in their head they know, they still think that you kind of arrive at this point in life where you've got it all figured. You know? Like, I at times envision myself, you know, 40, 50, 60, of like, I got it all figured out. You know, this is the part of my life where I'm figuring it out, and then I'll have it figured out. And I think it's really interesting and good. That's why I've loved our conversations. It's like, it's interesting to talk to someone who's much further along, who's gone through different things, experienced different things, is successful. Like, I would say you were very successful, and is sharing with you, I'm still figuring things out. You know, like, I think it's really cool to be able to hear that.
I'm still figuring stuff out. Yeah. And you know, for me, I'd say for me, and I don't know about you and your audience, I'm not a devoted student of the Enneagram My wife's a researcher, a learner. You know, she's a kind of, once she puts her focus on something, she becomes a subject matter expert, like for real.
Yeah.
And so she talks about, I learned those things from her, like the Enneagram. What my family tells me is I'm an Enneagram one, and there's kind of two ways I understand that could play out. You know, to be a perfectionist that's crippled, you know, from action because they're trying to figure out exactly what to get right. And then there's another side of that, or expression of the one, which is a reformer. And I think I'm that one. Now, I do appreciate detail. I want things to be done right. I have an eye for it. I don't know that I'm a, I don't see myself as a perfectionist in the sense that, you know, I'll write a note card, rip it up 8 times because, you know, the way my print didn't look right. Whatever, you get the point. But a reformer, you see things and you see how it could be better. You know, you see a piece of land and you develop it. You whatever. And all that to say, the ones tend to think they're right about most everything, and they move in confidence. And that's great when you're right, but when you're wrong and you think you're right, you can make a big mess. You know, so there's a bit of a conundrum there, because at some point, at least you have to decide, as best I could tell, what's right and move forward.
Yeah, you got
otherwise,
to.
I mean, you're just stuck, you know, in action. And, you know, give yourself the grace to go to, you know, I think I'm right. Best I could tell, I'm right, you know, and move on that. And what I think I'm learning to do better, is go, you know, when it's challenged, you know, I may not be right about that, you know, and then shift or make a change. And you know, the one of the axioms that we hear about CEOs, you know, is you just make a lot of decisions. That means you make a lot of bad ones, and you make a lot of good ones, but you make decisions. You move, you know. And doesn't mean that you move.
And that's exactly, I was actually about to say that.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say is, like, and we're lagging a little bit on here, but it's all good. It'll record fine. What I was going to say is that's one thing I'm learning as I'm pursuing this business, to allude to that fact, is the best thing you can do is just make decisions, even if they are wrong. Just do something and be willing to figure out that, okay, this was incorrect. And by doing that, you slowly work through this maze of, like, finding the path that actually works, rather than sitting back and being like, well, what's the right path? There's 1,000 of them. It's like, just make a decision and you'll eventually get to the ultimate, like, outcome you want through all of the mistakes and the failures and whatever. You just have to decide and do something.
And I'm not promoting that concept as one size fits all formula. I think it's very nuanced, you know, that I think some decisions you can make quickly and some that you need to really pause and do your research and your homework. So I'm personally not suggesting, you know, an MO where just make a bunch of decisions. It kind of doesn't
matter.
They need to be thoughtful and do your best to make a good one. I would say most people, when they're in the throes of making a decision, are striving to make a good one. They may wind up making a bad one, you know, because for a whole host of reasons. But I think it's just posture yourself in life that, you know, you make a decision and you act and you do what you can to weigh the cost and weigh the consequences. Like I said, sometimes you can do that quickly and sometimes you have to take your time, you know. But I think, like an example would be an airline pilot you know, a commercial airline pilot flying a, you know, a big jumbo jet, if they lose an engine, they don't have time to sit there and think through this and that and this and that. But they've been trained. They're trained, they train, they train, they train, they work the muscles so that in that moment they have the critical judgment to act. You know? So they are deciding, they are making decisions clearly. So I think some, you know, as we work the muscle to make decisions, we prepare ourselves for future decisions where we, nor would it be wise to rush through other decisions. You know, some of them just may need to sleep on it for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Now, I love that we're talking about this and changing your beliefs, because I think it's, I personally, and I think you would agree, I think it is probably the most important thing, is changing your beliefs, just in general, constantly refining them, reforming them, growing, whatever. What have you found, and I think you've said this, but what have you found to be the best way to make that change? Because what I mean is, like, there's a lot of gurus out there that say, you know, every morning wake up and write down 25 times of an affirmation to yourself about who it is you want to be based on, you know, whatever mistakes you're making now. So, like, if you're an angry person, you write down, I am calm, I am calm, I am calm, and you do it 25 times every single day. Like, there's a lot of science behind that, but then there's also a school of thought, which I kind of am falling in that camp now, of rather than writing it down and then just walking away, like, actually do the actions of what a patient person does. So if a patient person in the moment of getting frustrated takes a big breath, then your action is to take a big breath and not blow up. And you do that over and over and over and over and over to change the belief about, okay, I'm exercising patience. Yeah. I must be a patient good person question. And not an angry person. I guess, which camp would you fall in? Is,
you know,
would
again, you say it's both? I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer. I'm interested. I've done some of those things, you know, where write it down a gajillion times and every day. And I think that depends. Is that the formula for everybody? Probably not. Is that the formula for me all the time? No. It may depend on the gravity of the situation. And, but, you know, like, again, going back to, you know, you CrossFit, you work out, and there's an intensity level to training that you inflict upon yourself in order to achieve outcomes over a shorter period of time. And so I think really what you're alluding to or giving examples of is intensity. So however you pull that off, and I do think that what you're saying is it's a dance or a rhythm. It's both and. It's belief and behavior. It's belief and behavior. I like what you said. You know, it's, I may write it down. I may, you know, become, I meditate on that. I think a lot. When I'm working with my hands, I think all the time. You know, that's what I love. Part of it, it just gives me the space for my mind just to ruminate on things. So you meditate or you write it down. So, you know, as you already know, and your audience probably does, it's talked about a lot nowadays in terms of neuroscience. You know, our brain literally has neuro pathways. You know, just like as a kid, you'd walk to the store. If you walk the same path long enough, you beat down a well-worn path. And that's what a neuro pathway is in the brain. It's where our thoughts just go that direction. So what you're talking about, when we meditate or write it down or shifting beliefs, you're actually creating a new pathway, you know, and eventually your brain will go in that direction. You know, instead of waking up going, oh, today sucks, it's another sucky day, you know, for whatever reasons, that neuro pathway is developed. And if you're really trying to create a new one, you got to walk the path, you know, to where it becomes, at some point, God willing, hopefully you wake up and go, hey, today's another good day, you know. But it, I like what you said, that it's a belief, and then you go act. Like, I need to be patient.
bit.
Well, I need to act patiently. You know, I think it is both. I can't. Most people, I think, tend to focus on the behavior. I just need to be more patient. I just need to be more patient. I just need to be more patient. Broken record. And they double down, they try, and then they blow their top at their kid. You know, they're like, you know, I'm not patient.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why don't you start examining, why am I not patient? What do I believe that drives me to be impatient? You know, and there may be a subconscious belief is, well, I'm impatient because you're in my way and you're wasting my time. I've only got so much time to get stuff done. Well, that might be a lie. That might be a lie. It's like, why do you have to get that done? Well, because the world tells me I've got to get that done in order to be significant. It's like, well, what if that's a lie? You know, so there could be a whole host of web of beliefs that drive that behavior. You know, so I do like what you said. And I think for me, it's probably a combination too. You know, I think I've put, particularly in the last 15 years, much, much more focus on belief modification versus behavior modification. If I shift my beliefs, my behavior will take care of itself.
Man, that's all. I love that because that's, I'll just talk about like a fitness example. It's the same thing in fitness. Everyone knows that. That's what I do. It's like people are focused on the outcome of whatever the result is. Stronger, they want to have a six pack, they want to have whatever. And so they focus on that. Whereas you're kind of alluding to like the process of it. Like figuring out what the process is and aren't like hammering the new process, dissecting the process, and then the outcome comes eventually. Like, I really liked what you're saying there because I think that's so true. You have to look at like the why behind it, the process behind it, and dive into it.
I mean, and it sounds like a lot of
and
work.
Ultimately come to the result.
Because it is a lot of work.
Or at least you think you want in that moment. And then maybe that changes over time.
But too. On the other hand, it's just work. God made us to work.
Yeah.
He works. He made us in his image. It's like, yeah, you work 6 days, you know, and you rest. That's what he did when he created the earth. And there's more to that story than just that. But I think there's a work. We're made to work, you know, and I know there's a lot of, you know, in corporatocracy, there's a lot of mundane, soul robbing work. I wouldn't even call it work out there. Now that throws shade on the word work, but work's a good thing. I mean, it's just work. It's a lot of work, but it's just work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the things that we attach to it. You know, we attach to the, oh, this is beneath me, or oh, this is boring, or oh, rather than just looking at
it. Yeah, it is, because I think this is work. On that point,
and I'm meant to work, and right now this is the work before
fruitless
me.
Work is magic.
You know, and it's really hard.
You know,
it's easy to
if
say.
You're working and it doesn't bear fruit, it's futile and it's maddening. And you know, when your work bears fruit, it's rewarding. And you're motivated to do even more. And again, my belief system is that's part of the nature of the world that we live in, sadly, you know, is that there's a lot of toil and fruitlessness that's associated with the work that we do. But that's not the way it was meant to be, nor does it have to be that way. Again, I think that's a belief system, that's a mentality that, Like one of my beliefs, it's just work. It's no big deal. It's just work. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's just work. It's no big deal. I can do that. I do it all day long. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So tell me, I'm curious about this just selfishly. And this might be a very hard question to answer, but you know, you said you've been married for 40 years. What's been the biggest thing there that you've learned in marriage? I mean, there's like a million things, and that's kind of like a bull crap question, because it's like, dude, where do I even start? But I mean, I'm curious, man. Being married for 40 years is no small feat, and like, I know you've talked with me about this. You've made a lot of mistakes and things that happened, whatever. But like, if you could boil it down, like, what's the one thing you've learned?
That's a big question. Really, really helpful. And I don't know that I have a ready answer, Kyle. You know, superlatives are hard for me. Come up with the one thing or the best of class, but I'd say to me, it's like being married and having children, family, is probably the best thing you can do. It's just work. It's hard. It's very rewarding. You know, because the people business is a messy business. We're messy. And so as far as marriage, I don't have a formula. You know, I'm not going to go out yeah. on the speaking tour and teach on marriage. I'm the last person that wants to do that, because I don't have a formula. But I think what's been fortunate for both Molly Ann and me is there's a lot of yeah. values that we share, and we've shared from the beginning. So what she's naturally motivated to move toward, you know, her values, I'm naturally motivated to move. You know, you could tell what someone values. Here's an axiom that you've probably heard. If you look at my calendar and you look at my checkbook, that will tell you what I value, how I spend my time and how I spend my money. You know, if I tell you that dating my wife is important and you look at my calendar, you don't see any dates on the calendar. You don't see any, you know, money spent on dates. Yeah. It's just talk, you know, it's talk. But so what you value, we all naturally move in the direction of what we value. And I think the fact that fortunately, we have had and continue to have a lot of shared values. And that keeps us kind of tied together in a three-legged race. And sometimes we've got a stride and we win the blue ribbon, you know, because we just had a stride. And sometimes, you know, she's falling and I'm picking her up. Sometimes I'm falling or I quit. You know, lay down. It's kind of hard to keep moving in a three-legged race. But ultimately, there's a commitment, a rugged commitment, and a devotion to stay together and to finish well. And I think when you finish well. Sometimes finishing well is just finishing. You know, what's finish well look like? I don't know, you know. But again, go back to CrossFit. You know, when you're in a competition,
yeah.
And I haven't done that, so I'm not going to the audience that I'm a CrossFitter. I'm not a CrossFitter, yeah. But Kyle is.
Sometimes, you know, it is just not fitting.
But I'm an athletic person, you know. But yeah, I mean, you know, your last two sets of an exercise in a competition, you know, and I don't even know what all those things are called. You do, but it's almost like, you fall apart, it looks like crap, but you finish. You might not medal, or you might get third instead of first, you know, but you freaking finish. And yeah. And so
you finish. That's it. Yeah.
I guess that's part of it for us. It's, you know, what do you value? And as you're courting someone, you know, as you're dating or together, I think that's, you know, naturally, and don't rush it. It's not on the first date, you've got 10 questions to try to gauge somebody's, are you it or not? You know, that's very personal, of course, but I think being intent on exploring what your values are, and you'll know. And I think if you've got those things, and your values can change, of course, over time, which presents a challenge, but I think that's a lot of the glue that has helped her maintain a rugged commitment, because at times it's a rugged commitment. I mean, you're hanging on because you committed to it, and vice versa. It's true for me. But I'll say one final belief as we kind of near probably wrapping up, but that's up to you. But one other belief that I have that I think is germane here is, if something's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. You know, again, to go back to your workout world, if it's worth working out, if it's worth having a conditioned body, to have a conditioned mind, you know, to be a whole person that's healthy, if it's worth going to the gym in that equation, then it's worth doing poorly. Like, I was supposed to get there 4 days this week, but I only got there two. Okay, it's worth doing. It's worth doing poorly. You know? And...
yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? That's tongue in cheek. It's not to give yourself an excuse to be anything less than excellent. And excellence is, to me, is the best that you have to do with the time and resources that you have. So if I fart around, you know, in this class, in this semester, and I get to the last week, you know, it's like, oh man, I really just blew a lot of time away. One could say, well, that wasn't excellent. On the other hand, you could say, I put my back into it all day Sunday and crammed for the exam on Monday. So what I did with what time I had on Sunday was excellence. Yeah. Yeah. So when I say, you know, you know it. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's definitely two sides to that coin.
Now, I still strive for excellence. That doesn't mean perfection. But it just means I strive to do the best that I can do with the resources and the time that I have.
Yeah. I actually made a post about that not too long ago. I said sometimes the win for you might be just doing whatever the thing is, even if it's terrible. You know, and I gave the example of, like, if one day you come in and you're just dog tired, you feel like crap, and 10 burpees takes you just so long to do 10 burpees, but on other days you can come in there and smash 10 burpees. It's like, well, okay, but at least you did it. And you didn't quit, and you didn't just go home and hang out for the day. It's like, you went in there and you did it, and that's a win. But on the other side of it, don't use it as an excuse to just...
And you know, when you bring up win,
and it's like, well,
you know, that surfaces there, the whole topic.
That's the win sometimes. It's just
which
doing.
Is a could be a deep hole. Maybe we talk about that some other time. I don't know, but because I have some changed beliefs around that whole topic myself. But
yeah, we definitely.
Anyway. I'm down with that.
I like that. We'll leave that as a cliffhanger for the audience. Like, oh, what's it mean?
Sure. My pleasure.
Well, dude, I really appreciate. I appreciate you for the opportunity. I appreciate you sharing this stuff on your birthday, nonetheless. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
I hope.
Yeah.
You know. Like I said, I don't have a notebook that I'm trying to create a bunch of disciples from or anything like that. It's just, here it is. I hope some things that, you know, we kicked around today, people find helpful at least to chew on.
Yeah, no, I think they will, man.
Well, technically, I have an Instagram.
All right, I was going to say, where can people find you, but do you have a social media?
I think my daughter set it up for me. I
don't think you have
social media. If you search hard enough, you'll probably find something, but I probably look like I'm 12. And I have a Facebook account, but I don't post anything. Okay. I use it for Facebook Marketplace, like to buy and sell stuff. And I do have a LinkedIn account, and I need to go back and dumb down my LinkedIn account, because it's, you know, it's probably eerily similar to most other people's LinkedIn account, you know, that you're larger than life. And it's just, I need to dumb it down. But yeah, I have a LinkedIn account. Yeah. That's for obvious reasons, you know, it's somewhat essential, you know, in business, but yeah, it's out there. I really don't use it to connect with people, or I'm intentionally, that's a good word. Yeah, I'm trying to get more and more unplugged from some of that stuff beyond its utility value, you know.
Unplugged.
Or with the exception of, So anyway, LinkedIn. I don't know what the handle is, you know. Just Joe Elliott.
That's awesome, actually, that you do that.
Or Def Leppard. Yeah, Def Leppard. That'll work. That's lead singer for Def Leppard.
Or Def Leppard.
That's right. That's or who Def I really am. Yeah, Joe Elliott. He's about. He's
the lead singer, right?
3 months ago here in Atlanta, and I think he's 70-ish, something like that.
Yeah.
So.
You're.
So that's not me. For sure.
Oh wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate your time, man. And I think a lot of people will get value out of this. I know I did. I love just talking to you and just listening. And it's been, like I said before, hanging out with you. And I plan to come back and do more work. But during that time when I was really working with you, it was very, very needed for me just to like have someone that would just listen.
And Kyle,
shoot
certainly
the breeze
you're
with,
welcome, but that was a two-way street. I mean, it was just
very
fun.
Needed. And so for that,
working
I'm
and
really
talking
thankful,
about
which is why I wanted to have you on just
everything. Like we went, like you said, we went down some rabbit holes. There's a lot going on the planet right now, a lot of strange stuff. And we had conversations about strange things. And I felt very free and safe to talk about them with no judgment. And that's it was great. I loved it too. Yeah.
Dude. Loved it.
Sasquatch.
We'll just end it by saying aliens.
All right, man. Well, have a great one.
Yeah. Another cliffhanger. What do they mean? I appreciate it. I'm going to hit the stop record button right here, but it'll keep us FaceTiming, so.